School leadership is demanding, and your time is finite. You don't need vague jargon. You need practical strategies that work. Join host Adam Bush every Wednesday morning for your morning boost on the Forward Ed Network. In just a few minutes, you'll get high-impact professional development, moving you from a reactive fixer to a capacity-building coach. Subscribe to your morning boost today.
Welcome to From Carpool to College, a show for parents who are trying to keep their sanity while navigating the college planning landscape. Welcome to From Carpool to College. I am Tracy Amadeo.
And I'm Tara Horitz.
And today we have a special guest, Jerry Flora, in the house. Jerry is going to take us through the ins and the outs of college athletics, the transition from middle school and high school athletics to beyond. And parents, let me tell you, if you think you know, you don't. You definitely don't. It's ever-changing landscape. I found Jerry, or Jerry, you find me. I don't know. We found each other on LinkedIn. And I just want to give a second to Jerry to kind of introduce himself, talk a little bit about who he is, what he does, and then he's going to teach us everything we need to know about recruiting. Go for it, Jerry. Welcome.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Both of you. Thank you very much. So, I'm Jerry Flora. I'm originally from Long Island. I ended up at Iona College. It's now called Iona University. I wanted to work on Wall Street. I have a business degree, but I never ended up on Wall Street. I ended up in coaching. It's usually how it usually works. I coached in higher ed for 27 years. I was a head coach in college for 10 years, which is, you know, pretty long because they say the average life of a college coach is somewhere between 5 and 7 years. So I made it 10. I had an opportunity to leave on a high note. So I was working in rec services at William Patterson. I was one of the assistant directors of recreation. I took over the club sports because I wanted to get into athletic administration. And that's been a whirlwind since 2018, between being a high school head coach for 3 years, working in the Sprint Football League for a year at St. Thomas Aquinas, working in high school as a dean of discipline. And then I have my recruiting business, which kind of took off, and then it's kind of changed a little bit with the world of NIL and the transfer portal. So I'm limited in who I work with. I keep my numbers down, but it's very, very difficult as recruiting has changed greatly.
I know. And that's what brings you here today, Jerry, because what I saw on LinkedIn, the biggest impression that you made on me was that you are so student athlete first. And I can't say that for other organizations when it comes to recruiting. I feel like there's kind of all that glitters isn't gold when it comes to college recruiting. I work a lot with high school kids, and there's a lot of underbelly to the recruiting process that is not out in the open. It's very much behind the curtain. So today Tara and I are going to just shoot a whole bunch of questions at you because we want our parents to know if they have a kid who is showing some interest and ability, where do we start? How do we get that pathway to playing sports in college? Because it's changed so much, Jerry, as you know. And when I talked to Jerry, we were on the phone for like over an hour, just like comparing.
2 hours to be exact.
Was it? Oh, wow.
We're both in the same mindset that we're just trying to protect the kids and do right by kids. And the system seems, and I'll just speak for myself, I feel like the system is very much stacked against us. And parents need to be equipped with the knowledge to be able to make decisions in as early as eighth grade, ninth grade, 10th grade, and just understanding the landscape. So can we start with timelines? Can we talk a little bit about timelines?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I usually tell parents that, like, from a recruiting standpoint, like from a football standpoint, I usually don't, when I charge my prospects, I don't charge a prospect until July 1 of at the end of their ninth grade going into 10th grade year, because that's essentially by the NCAA calendar when they become a sophomore. And there's really nothing I can do for an eighth and ninth grader I can't do for a 10th grader. I mean, I know people that charge at that level. I don't charge at that level. It's consultation because, you know, colleges right now are looking at sevens. You know, they're looking at the top 1% eights. They're not looking at nines and tens and thirties.
Wait a minute, we
not.
Got. I'm calling time out. So this is why we want you here. When you say sevens, what do you mean by that? Because I think we're going to Atlantic City.
Right. So I mean 2027. So they're looking at 2027s, and then they, you know, with the two signing periods. I mean, with the two signing periods in December and February, then they start to kind of look at 28s. And they're looking at 28s now, but, you know, it's the top, you know, 5%, 4%, 3%. You know, and so, you know, not 29s and 30s, you know, I mean, it's not as frequent. So, but the one thing that is very important is the fact that not a lot of people know about what the eligibility clearinghouse is. And the eligibility clearinghouse was set up a number of years back because of Prop 48. So it was set up in an effort to, you know, make sure that student athletes are eligible to play on Division I, Division II. You don't need the eligibility clearinghouse for Division III. So, like, when I coached in high school, we made it a point that at the end of the eighth grade year in May, we got all the eighth graders, we got all the seventh graders, and we got all the ninth graders in the auditorium. And then we kind of went through the spiel in case the ninth graders didn't get it, because in my first year, they obviously didn't, because I wasn't there. The eighth graders, seventh grade, the eighth graders are getting what they need to know for next year, and the seventh graders are 2 years away in terms of understanding, you know, the types of classes you need to be taking, the grades you need to get, like, you know, on Twitter, or if you have a social media account, don't post your GPA as a 2.5. No one wants a 2.5 anymore. They want a 3.0.
So let's hit pause on that. So we're talking about the eligibility center. We're talking about the NCAA eligibility center that every parent, and I even think that kids who aren't sure if they want D1, D2, D3, I think any kid who's bound for college athletics or is just thinking about it should register anyway. There's nothing more impressive when you have, when we work with our clients, Tara and I have a handful of athletes, we make them put their eligibility number right below their name on their resume. Yes. And it's like, boom, it's neon. It's also a statement. Yes. It's a statement. Like, I'm a serious athlete. I've done my stuff. I've gone onto the eligibility center. I have my number. I'm taking courses that are aligned with the requirements. It's already speaking to character.
If you don't have an NCAA number, it means one of two things. It, to me, if I'm a coach, it means one, you don't have the grades to play college. So you're hiding something. So you're not putting yourself out there because you don't want anyone to see you got a 2.3. The other thing is maybe you don't even know what it is. So now if you don't know what
it is. Yeah.
Then are you really a college athlete in that sense? So, getting back to your point about why it's important to have it early is because and aspire and put the Division I and II on there as in the highest level. Because I've seen student athletes have growth spurts and go from, you know, I'm just a D3 guy, you know, I'm never going to play. And then all of a sudden they're 6'4", 215, and mom and dad are like, what about Division I? So we never filed for the clearinghouse.
Right.
So, you know, what do you do now? Because now they, you know, they can't recruit you until you get that information. And yeah, you can get the number whenever you want. So it's not that hard, but there's certain requirements in you. Like, you got to have 10 units. One thing that people don't realize is you got to have 10 of your 16 units by the end of your sophomore year. If you don't, you got a problem.
Right. And
so I had someone have 9.5 units.
Ugh. Was it a private school or a public school?
No, it was a public school but it had two public schools. So it was the way that it was worded in the course catalog. In one public school in the district, it was labeled as a class that was good for the NCAA. The other one, it wasn't updated.
That was the one
that he was at.
Right. And that's in the public school side where Tara and I live. There's a lot of role confusion, like who's in charge of this. So, for example, when I worked at a school a couple schools ago, I was the NCAA coordinator because I had coaching experience and college planning experience. In some cases, it's the athletic director. In some cases, it's the director of guidance. But there is someone in every school district, in every high school, who is that compliance officer. So that person has to be updating the courses, making sure, just kind of putting out information to families that this is time sensitive and you need to get on this. So it's tough, though, because the coaches do a good job, but they're so busy. They're so busy. They may mention it, but it might just roll, you know, it might just glaze right over the family's head. They don't get the importance of it. So if anything, parents, if you're hearing this, wherever you are, please look at the NCAA Eligibility Center. So where does that information go, Jerry?
What sense?
And like, who's looking at it and why do they look at it and how do the recruiters get information about students, about prospects?
So what they do is they'll take that number and they'll put it into the national database to see if you're eligible. And once again, it goes.
Is it still a 2.3 or take a knee? Remember that?
It used to be. It used to be a 2.0 and it was a 10-10, and then it's now a 2.3 and it's a sliding scale. So the SAT, I think, is a little higher. But it's very rare you have a 2.3 kid that has a 10.50, you know, sometimes you have, you know, kid, maybe he's a little lazy and whatnot, you know, and then it's very rare you have a 3.0 that has an 8.70, you know, just because of the sheer volume from an academic standpoint. But, in terms of the importance of it is really, you know, like I said, you don't need it for Division III. You just need it for Division I, Division II. The standards are slightly different between Division I and Division II. And getting back to your point from a coach perspective, you know, obviously as a high school coach, I brought that college mentality with me. And I think what I've experienced locally is I get a lot of coaches that will just send their kids my way because I know all the rules and stuff and I keep up with everything. So I look at high school coaches three ways. I look at either, you know, one, you know, they don't have the time because, you know, they're coaching and they're teaching, maybe they're a department chair and, you know, there's a lot going on. One, two, they don't have the knowledge, you know, some, you know, don't, I mean, unless you're getting it online, unless you're getting it from a friend in college or the AD, you'd have to research yourself. And where do you go? Where do you go to research that? And then the third one is I run into some guys that just don't, it's not, they don't feel like it's part of their job. They feel like, you know, their job is August to November. And when the season ends, they'll help get colleges in the school and they'll make a few phone calls. But beyond that, that gets passed off to guidance counselors. I've heard that firsthand. So that's where people like you and I come into play, where we kind of work beyond November, because that's when it's picking up in November. It's not done. It's done for football in February, March, April. That's when it's done. So.
Right. And every sport obviously is going to have its different season and timeline.
Right.
And that's common sense, you know, families, if you're looking about, you know, you're playing a spring sport.
Which is why I say you should start early. It used to be, before COVID, it was like junior year. Now COVID kind of sped everything up to like sophomore year. So, and I have some families that start freshman year. So if your son or daughter is going to start in ninth grade, then you should start. If they're going to be in ninth grade, like I had a kid at Sleepy Hollow that's going to Rhode Island on a full scholarship. He started for me as a ninth grader. He was that good of a player. Now those people are few and far between.
Yeah.
If you're not, you're a JV player, there's really no need to start because coaches don't care about JV film. It's not a big a deal until you get varsity film.
So let's talk about what it looks like to start. So we hit start. Now what do we do?
Okay. So what do you do? So the start process really is the first piece is you have to, because everybody's on social media, you got to figure out what social media outlet you're going to use that you're going to get the best bang for your buck. To me, college coaches are mostly on X. They're on LinkedIn. Like some of my friends and former colleagues are on Facebook and Instagram, but those conversations are mostly like, how's the family? Happy birthday. Good to see the kids are doing well. We're not talking about recruiting on Facebook and Instagram. You're talking about recruiting on X.
Interesting.
So when I look at these X accounts that these kids have, like I've made a big push the last 2 weeks to try and help kids, you know, fix their Twitter accounts. I mean, they're so bad. I mean, there's Twitter accounts that don't have pictures. So my golden rule, I know I have colleagues that will say this, if you see an account that doesn't have a photo or it has a photo that's questionable, it's either a bot or it's a fake account. So it's either a block or a skip.
So I'm a kid. I'm a baseball player in 10th grade, and I'm like, let's go. And of course, Tara, of course, I'm using baseball because Tara's a big baseball family. Tara has an 8th grade boy who plays baseball.
There you go.
And my boys are baseball as well, but they're in their own little no more. Oh, baseball. Now it's just beer league.
We can talk about baseball instead if you want.
It's good, but it all ties in. Okay. I was field hockey for years, but it's all the same. But when we go on X, right? So I'm in 10th grade. I'm playing baseball. I'm a left-handed pitcher and I'm going to go on X. No one's telling me to do that unless I'm working with someone privately, which Jerry does this for football and girls flag football. So cool. We'll talk about your combine and your showcases in a little bit. So no one's really telling me to go on X. No one's guiding me unless I'm working with someone. So I have my name, my mugshot. And what do I put in there? Do I put, let's say for football, we were talking about like what kind of stats would.
Well, it's funny. Well, it's good. It's funny to say that. I was just critiquing a kid now. There's a certain format that I've gotten from friends and that I used in college that kind of hits every bullet point. The first is you got to put your high school. I can't tell you how many students don't put the high school or they abbreviate it. There's not many college coaches that are going to know what BHS is. That can mean a lot of
things. How many BHSs there are. There's so many. Right. Totally.
That can mean a lot of things.
Yeah.
Or they start off with, like, I'm the man. Well, you have to be at a school before you could say you're the man or the woman or the woman.
God. Yeah, yeah.
So, right, exactly. So I usually go high school first, then jersey number. Why jersey number? Because when a coach, if you don't have a picture of you and your in the two boxes that has your jersey, how are they supposed to know what jersey you are when they watch your film?
Right.
So jersey number second, class is third. So it should say 2027. Don't put class of 27. Don't put class of 2027. Don't put CO 2027. Put 2027. You're only allowed 160 characters on Twitter. So you have to maximize your characters. So if you put class of 27, you've just used 8 extra characters.
Right.
So 2027 is fine. And then after that, you should put your height and your weight. I love people that will put 5, 10, 180 pounds. You don't need the pounds. We know it's pounds.
It doesn't have to say
LBS. Right. It doesn't have to say pounds spelled out. You're using extra characters.
Spelled incorrectly.
It sounds trivial to us. When I talk to people, I realize they're probably not getting that feedback from someone else. Like when you put your position, always this is the same for any sport. You should put the position first you want to play in college. So in football terms, it's usually offense, defense. So it's usually wide receiver, defensive back. Or baseball, maybe it's infielder, outfielder, whatever the case is.
Sure.
But if you want to be an outfielder in college, then OF should go first. Because that's what college coaches are looking at. They see your first position is your primary position. Don't spell out outfielder because you don't have enough characters.
Right.
The other thing I try and tell my prospects is you want to be cool and use those little emojis. You can use the emojis to break it up. You can use those slash marks. A lot of them will use the up and downs. I mean, you can be as creative as possible. I've had coaches say to me that the more creative a student athlete is with their account, the more they took to put the account in, the more they care about playing in college. Yeah. If the account's just thrown together, like I had a kid 2 days ago that said, it said BHS, it said class of 27, it had us huddle, and it said, I'm the man. And he wonders why, when you look under his page, he's got no one follow him, and he's got two followers.
So is that because what happens? Go ahead.
Because a college coach sees that and they think it's a bot. Like when I get something like that, I'm either blocking or skipping.
Yeah.
And you don't know, like, you know, you don't know, like, when I was at William Patterson, we had student workers that would go on and check our players' social media accounts to make sure that they were putting stuff on the accounts that was becoming of our program.
Right.
Like, hey, listen, what you're posting, that's not good enough. They take that down, or, you know, don't post that. Or don't. So schools are doing that now. So that's why they want to see something there. So that's why I usually go high school, jersey number, class. I usually go height, weight, and position, either switched however you want, and then GPA. I love how people put the GPA at the end. So you don't care about academics then if it's the end.
Oh, yeah, I guess so. That's like that's a hidden message there.
So, and you only put your GPA if it's over 3.0.
Right.
And we can get into a whole conversation about that. Because in high school, you know, like for an R school, you know, like a 90 at R school is not a 90 in college. A 90 at R school is like a 2.8, 2.7.
Right.
So a kid at our school thinks he's a 3.0, but if that's not the way it works.
Yeah, Tara and I talk about that because even with our non-athletes, just our clients, and parents think, oh my God, my kid has a 3.4 GPA out of a 4.0. They could go to such and such school. And I call it the Rocky III syndrome, when Rocky was going to fight Clubber Lang and Mickey's right. Like, he's going to kill you, Rocky. You know, your other guys were chumps. It's like your GPA is a chump GPA. it's inflated. And
right. They don't understand that.
And schools have to, you know, colleges are looking at the high school school report where they have the spread, right? And then you look at the 50th, you know, you look at that middle, the median, you look at that fifth decile, right. And that's where you see the 3.8. It's like, wah, wah, you know? So right. To your point, parents, another big takeaway is, you know, the GPA is relative and it's different. And it's in the context of your school. So,
right.
So take, not to burst bubbles, but, you know, again, we always say like, God, I wish I knew then what I know now. Right. That's like
right.
Our mantra. So they're putting their GPA, right. They're putting Huddle, their link to their
Huddle. Well, so after GPA, when they've gotten to that point, now they want to put if they're a multi-sport athlete. Coaches love multi-sport athletes.
Okay.
Don't put football, track, the tennis, you only got 160 characters. You don't have to spell out all the sports you play. Just say multi-sport, you're good. Now, unless you want to play baseball and you're a football player, well, then you have to change your bio around. You have to put different photos. You know, you can't, like I had a kid the other day, he's got a picture of a football and a picture of a baseball. I go, what do you want to do in college? You're leaving a guessing game to a coach that's looking at your photo. You got to pick one. He goes, well, I don't know. I said, well, then that's a problem because you're going to slow down your recruiting. Mm-hmm. So after you get to the high school and you put the multi-sport, then you got to put your email. So now if you're a captain, that would go in there somewhere before your email. And the other thing that goes in for academics, and then that would take stuff off the back end, is if you're a National Honor Society, if you're a Dean's List kid, you want like a high academic award. The other thing that's important, I see kids do all the time, is what's the highest level you can get in any sport when you get acknowledged as a postseason award? Would we say it's All-State?
Right, All-State or All-American.
That's the highest you can get, right?
Yeah.
So there's no need to put All-State, All-Conference, All-League, All-Region. Listen, they all encompass all that.
Yeah.
You don't have to put all that. But they do, and then they're like, Coach, I got no room. Like, you were first-team All-State. You're good.
Yeah.
Like all those other things encompassed into the All-State. Yeah, but I want people to know. They don't need to know. You're All-State.
Yeah, you got it. You're number one. You're top of the
heel.
Yeah, you're big time.
Like that's a piece. And then, you know, coach's name should go on there somewhere. And then either or their email or their phone number. If you have room, it's either or. And then the NCAA number. And then that's it. Like, don't get crazy and put your cell phone. I tell people all the time, don't put your cell phone.
No.
The reason why you don't put your cell phone for me is two reasons. One, you're giving out now way too much information. You're trying to engage conversations with coaches. Your DM and your email are more than enough. You want to get to a point where they reach out to you and say, hey, I noticed your number's not there. I'd love to set up a phone call. What's your phone number? Now you're starting that dialogue thing.
Yeah.
So if you're not comfortable with dialogue, you've started it. If you plaster all your information on social media and I come to your page and I'm like, oh, okay, he's okay. All right, go ahead. Next. Because everything's there. I can go back there. I got his number. No. It's like almost like I think I said this to you. It's almost like like when you want to date that, when you want
it. I was thinking it. I was thinking it, but I didn't say it.
You want that first date.
Get dinner first. First date.
Like, I remember my first date. I mean, not to change the subject. It took 7 dates before I got the number. But I kept going back.
Right.
Well, it's college recruiting is the same thing.
It's hard to get a little bit. A little hard to get.
Right. College recruiting is the same thing. You have to, you want them to keep coming back. If you give them everything, they're not coming back unless you're a stud. So that's kind of the bio that I'm looking for. And then your video, your huddle video should not be embedded in your bio. It should be underneath pinned post. So once again, you're only allowed X amount of characters.
Right.
So some people put the huddle video. No, you get a separate place for that.
You could, so you post it as like a comment. Like, so this, like,
you post it underneath. Underneath, it'll be your huddle video is below. So you got your bio, you got your photo. Because what happens is coaches see the photo. Bam. Oh, wow, that's really nice. Then they look at your bio. Okay, they read the bio. Okay, then they see the video. Okay, great. So they have everything they need. If coaches got to scroll, then you're probably done because they're not going to sit there. Like, I love, like, people, like after the video, the other no-no is you got to post stuff. So if the rest of your page is blank, then you're probably a bot or you're probably a fake account or you probably don't know what to like or not like.
You're just not committed.
There's a whole thing that goes into the whole social media. So don't waste your time on Snapchat. Don't waste your time on TikTok. Don't waste your time on Instagram and Facebook. Even, I mean, LinkedIn is better, but most kids aren't on LinkedIn. So X is where you need to be. And I have families, you know, like moms and dads will code the account as ninth graders because they want to be on it with their kids. And that's fine. You know, until they feel like they're ready. And then I have some parents that, like, when you think you're talking to the kid, but you're talking to the parent because they're just not ready to, they're not ready to break loose and let their kid do it. But at the end of the day, you're not playing for the coach that your kid is.
Right.
So there's a lot of give and take when it comes to this.
Yeah. You mentioned, you know, we talked about huddle for football. Every sport is going to have a different like online conduit through which students can showcase their stats and their accomplishments, like mile split is for my runners and, or is that the swimmers? I get confused. I thought, but there's different, you know, parents,
right.
Your kids are playing different sports. So you'll know these and do your research. There's more than one. So you have to really talk to coaches and see which one is going to be, you know, kind of showcasing your kid better, or at least user-friendly. I mean, there's a lot out there. Okay. So we have our kid out there in the universe.
The biggest no-no I want to comment about the video. The biggest, like, don't do is the kid that has the 8-minute film. Coaches are not watching the 8 minutes. Don't give me a 15-minute film. Like as a former recruiter, I can tell in the first 4 or 5 plays if you can play or not. I'm looking to see if you can bend. I'm looking to see if you finish. I'm looking to see what you're doing on the backside of a play. Are you jogging? Are you taking the play off?
Oh, I hate that. Would they just, right, yeah.
Those are the things that college coaches are looking at. So make sure I usually tell people, keep it to 3 minutes or less. Usually 3 rules of thumb when you put together a football film. 3 minutes or less, 1. 2, don't put the film in chronological order. Because it makes you look like you just went boom, 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 hit that, and you're out. See you bye. No, you put play number 1, play number 10, you move it around. The other thing is you don't put the same angle on there 6 times. So if you have a drone shot of a hit and you have a sideline shot, you have an end zone shot, then more than likely you don't have enough clips. So you're highlighting the same clips over and over again. Coaches will pick up on that. Then they think that your film's not really that good. And then the third thing is probably the most important. We don't see a lot of it now. Is the kid that makes a play on the opposing sideline and he's pointing in the opposing sideline or he's doing this with the chest or he's making it look like the game's about him. Those college coaches don't want that. Yeah. They don't want to deal with that whole, there's that whole character piece now. And you've now just gone from top of the board to bottom of the board.
Yeah, that's
or middle.
Important.
You've dropped from the top.
Well, Coach Flora gave us a lot to think about, talking about football recruiting for our kids who want to play in college. We reviewed the Eligibility Center. We talked about social media, what to do, what not to do. And in this first part, parents, we hope that you were able to understand there's so much that goes on behind the scenes. And thank you for joining us this segment. We will continue with another episode in our interview with Coach Flora.
Thank you for listening to From Carpool to College. We never want parents to say, I wish I knew then what I know now. If today's conversation gave you clarity or direction, we invite you to explore more at FromCarpoolToCollege.com. And if your family is looking for personalized college and career planning support, visit AcademicMentoringLLC.com to learn how we guide students and their families through this process with intention and strategy. From Carpool to College is proud to be a member of the Forward Ed Network, amplifying conversations that support students, families, and educators. As you navigate what's ahead, remember, you don't have to do it alone.
Are you ready to transform your school or classroom? Join hosts Adam and Jim on Control Shift Lead, the monthly podcast on the Forward Ed Network. Every episode, they bring in top educators from across the United States to deliver three game-changing insights: something you can control in your work, something that will shift your thinking, and something you can use to lead tomorrow. Don't just manage, lead. Subscribe to Control Shift Lead today.